was not uncommon, guys. He would get, you know, be in the hospital on a Monday all day getting his chemo treatment. And then he'd leave and go home, and he'd still be like, they'd send him home and he'd still be getting it like through, you know, and at his apartment. And they, at some point on Tuesday, they'd come out and take it off him. So basically, you know, Monday and half of Tuesday. So he went, you know, certainly wouldn't come to a practice on Monday, and Tuesday, maybe he'd show up and watch. And then Wednesday he'd like come and participate partially, and Thursday do a little bit more. And if we had a game on Friday, he'd play. And best we found, we don't know of an example of another athlete doing that.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison. As always, here with my co-host, Neruda Perdomo. We got a really good episode for you guys today. But first, you know, it's game day, Tuesday, January 7th, and it's in conference play, Boca conference play in the E8. So who talk to me about who you guys got today and maybe a little bit about your mindset going into it.
Play Brockport today. Pretty sure it's at 7 or 7:30. You know, I'm really excited to play them, but not much else to say other than I'm locked in, man. You know, conference play last year, senior year, you know what I mean? So I just want to go out with a good result, man. So locked in. What about you?
We got Fisher tonight, and you know, Fisher's always a really good team, and I feel like around the league, people are just like, Fisher lost Dan Cook, they're not as good. But I mean, Coach Rio Sedonia is a really good coach. They're running a lot of similar concepts, so it's going to be a dogfight, hopefully, like if we do our job. And you know, Connor Williams is a great player, and it's going to be tough playing against him as well. But like you said, last year, locked in, just trying. We already had our first game earlier in the year against Naz, but just trying to get a win. And we'll definitely have to give a recap on our first, or your first EA game and my second EA game this year later on. But, I mean, we got Coach Pat Yuckum, head coach of Wash U, but has also been the head coach at Coe College, UW Oshkosh, led Oshkosh to the national championship in 2018, I believe was the year. And now he's leading Wash U, who's 10-1 right now, having a really good year. And this was a fire episode, and I feel like we barely talked about basketball. Like, we weren't talking about his offense or defensive schemes or, you know, how he's getting players to lock in. It was really just like we covered so much, and I want to hear what you got to say about talking with Coach Yuckum and this episode as a whole.
Definitely shout out Coach Yuckum. I mean, we had communicated with him about getting on the pod since last spring. So we finally made it happen, and he supported us, you know, on social media and behind the scenes for a long time now. So I was excited to finally, you know, get him on the pod, and it was a great conversation. Like you said, it wasn't really, like you said, much talk about basketball. I felt like it was just a regular conversation and us trying to get to know him and talking about just life things, right? But I think obviously like the biggest takeaway or most memorable part of the conversation for me was just obviously to talk about Justin Hardy, man. Just his story is like really touching, you know what I'm saying? He was a warrior, and I truly respect, you know, Wash U and that program for what, you know, what they're about and how they supported Justin, and how they still keep his memory alive to this day. So yeah, it was a great conversation, bro. I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait for the viewers to hear.
Nah, yeah, the Hardy situation, like, it's so touching. We talked about it in the episode. Like, if you haven't watched that extended piece that ESPN did, you definitely have to. I was watching it with a friend, and like, they were getting emotional just hearing the story from, like, the background noise. But it's an inspiring story for anybody. You don't have to be just about sports. But, like, when you think your life is at its lowest or it's rock bottom, I promise you it's not as serious or in danger as Justin's was. And he continued to push through and was enjoying life at that, dealing with stomach cancer and, you know, knowing that you only have a certain amount of time to live. And he was just living his life and still hooping. And at that, a really, really high level. So mad respect to Justin Hardy and his family, too. If you haven't donated to the Hardy Foundation, definitely go you know, if you have the means to do it, I definitely encourage that. But I mean, I don't want to continue talking about it too much because we covered a lot about it in the episode, but it's just really inspiring. So go do your research on that situation and then come back and listen to Coach Yuckum talk about it. But I mean, we talked about the UAA also in the episode, and I wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit with you because I feel like the UAA is kind of like putting their stamp on Division III as like we're clearly the best league in the country. I don't know if you agree with that statement, but I'm starting to think that. So I just like when I was talking about it in the episode about how it's super tough, you know, like traveling around and seeing different concepts of basketball. This is a prime example, like the Emory and Rochester weekend, like that's your travel partner. You go to Atlanta on Friday, let's say, and Emory, you know, they're playing in the 80s. They average the second most points in the league at 85 points per game. And then the Sunday game, you're going to Rochester and they play a slow down version. They like half court, slow possessions. They statistically average the least amount of points in the league. So it's just you're getting a variety of basketball styles and you have to be good in those games because, like he said, there's no conference tournament. So, you know, you lose a back-to-back weekend and it's like, wow, my season's really in jeopardy. But, I mean, I want to hear your thoughts about the UAA and this Division III landscape, but also any, like, players, teams you're specifically looking at this year.
Dude, I mean – so here's my thing with like the conference battle thing, because you know it's been a hot topic on the Not Even D2 pod. It's tough for me to say, like, bro, the NESCACs this year, bro, because especially my take last year about like I said UAA I think is better than the NESCAC, but NESCACs this year have been balling, bro. NESCACs this year have been balling because you got Trinity made the Final Four, you got Hamilton they're not even ranked right now, and I'm like, yo, they only have one loss.
They have one loss, and Hank and Tejah are like probably one of the best duos in the country.
That's what I'm saying. They're not a top 25, and they really beat some good teams, bro. So I'm confused about that. And then you got Wesleyan, who's undefeated. They're top 10 in the country, right? So you got all those teams, those three teams at the top. Tufts is pretty good this year, right? And they're always pretty solid. But then you look at the UAA, and then it's like you got NYU undefeated right now. They're 9-0. Emory 10-1. WashU 10-1. Brandeis 9-2. Carnegie Mellon 8-2. Chicago 8-2. Rochester 6-5. But they have some good wins.
Yeah,
some good teams. Like I'm pretty sure they beat Hobart. They beat Ithaca, who beat us. They beat Cortland, if I'm not mistaken. Who's like some good teams out here.
It'd be interesting to kind of hear how the MPI kind of works with that, because they're not really playing they're not playing a national, like they're not playing a lot of ranked teams. Like you mentioned, their good wins are like Hobart, Ithaca, and those are good programs, but they're not programs like Illinois Wesleyan, teams like that WashU are playing. But see how that's going to like work with the MPI, but keep going with your thought.
I was just saying, like, it's just stacked this year at the top, bro, for both conferences, right? NESCAC and AUAA. So I'm not going to make my verdict on who I think is better. I don't want, you know, any of my Hamilton guys sending me clips and stuff saying, what are you talking about? But, nah, dude, it's a great time to be in Division III right now. A lot of really good teams in the division, I feel like, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, Hamilton's not even ranked in the top 25, and they're nasty. But yeah, bro, it's UAA is a great conference. Like I said, I mean, it's crazy with the travel and all that, but nevertheless, there's still student athletes getting it done. You know what I'm saying? Getting that travel done, getting their work done, and still competing, and will bust your ass, bust your A on the other on the other side of the ball. So,
yeah, I mean, like you said, it's a great time to be in Division III and following it, because like especially going into conference play when you like we're going to be following NESCAC battles loaded, UAA battles loaded, ODAC battles loaded. Like every conference, there's a lot of parity, and I love it. But a few players in the NESCAC that I just want to give a quick shout out. Definitely shout out first Justin Allen coming off of 50 piece. That's
UAA. You said shout out in the NESCAC.
Oh, My fault. Shout out to our boy Justin Allen, at Carnegie Mellon, who just had a 50 piece, and he's coming on the pod next week. So that's big time by him. And then also, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to the duo of Jair Knight and Ben Pierce at Emory. They're both averaging north of like 17 points, and like you don't see that a lot. Like two players on the same team that are really good, just having elevated years where they're averaging close to 20 points per game. So I just wanted to shout those three guys out real quick. It's going to be a great conference to follow. And back to Coach Yuckum, though. I mean, it was, like we said, a really good episode. We talked about a lot with him, the Hardy situation, how Wash U came available, his memories from national championship run with Oshkosh, and, you know, some lighter topics, the Spicy Ones interview that you brought up. So we just covered a lot with him, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. All right, we are here with Coach Yuckum. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're pretty good, Coach. We're excited to get you on, like I was telling you before we got on there. You know, long time coming, so I definitely appreciate this. And I just want to know, like, what you been doing today? Tell us about your day so far.
Well, had a stop. I got my coffee this morning.
So you're a Starbucks over Dunkin'?
I'm a Bucks guy. I drive by two on my way to Wash U. So, usually I stop at one, and that's how I get my day started, and just have some meetings. We're starting our break here. So had several things, meeting with, our strength coach and just knocking out some things that I've been putting on the table for a little bit. While we finished up our last game here. So, and then my wife told me this morning, I've got an extensive list when I get home. Since it's, just was aware of like Christmas is in like 5 days, you know, I'm like, oh yeah. So, bevy of things to do, but, all good stuff.
So this will be released after Christmas, but what's the wifey getting for Christmas?
yeah, that's good. Well, we've got, So we're coming up on next year is our 25th wedding anniversary.
Wow. Congrats.
And which talk about like, where's that time gone? Right. So we're going to take a really nice trip somewhere. So we're kind of that present's going to be pushed off a little bit. We've got a kind of an agreement, like, you know, like the holidays, you know, always fall in the middle of the basketball season, no excuse, but my job is always like to get the lights on, get the tree up, get all the, you know, boxes of stuff. So we've got kind of a clear, you know, like what are my responsibilities? She's, you know, as any coach's spouse, you know, I've got two boys, college age, kind of around your ages. She's, you know, my wife's Alyssa, awesome, way smarter than me. I married way above, you know, my pay grade for sure. And it really, like, again, so outside of the season, I try to really, really pick it up and kind of overcompensate, because I know during like the 5 or 6 months, man, like it's just too much falls on her shoulders. So, yeah, all good. But I'm very fortunate to have the family that I do and their support.
Yeah. Shout out to all the coaches' spouses, because, I mean, being a spouse of a coach, it's a tough life. Like, little time at home, little time supporting, like, maybe the kids, anything like that. So definitely shout out to her, and I hope you guys have a good trip, because you deserve it as well. But, I mean, that's a high note. I don't want to bring it down, but last night you guys took a tough loss. But it's also, like, the biggest non-conference rivalry in Division III. And I was watching some videos, and there was a lot of people, even though it's like during break. So just talk about like the energy last night, your thoughts post game, and, you know, any comments for the team moving forward.
Sure. Well, you know, we're certainly disappointed in the outcome of the game. But it's kind of look at it like this. You know, there's winning and there's learning. You know, so we learned a heck of a lot last night. you know, Illinois Wesleyan and WashU. We've got a great history. It's two storied programs. It's more than two good teams. It's two programs, you know, that share a lot of history. There's a lot of pride and respect in this one, and they're very good. They played really well last night, and they were better than us last night. And I'm looking forward. I haven't had a chance to review the film and tear it apart. That'll be coming. And then, you know, I think something we always, you know, whether we're, you know, irregardless of the outcome, you know, we try to really stick to our process and how can we get better. And, you know, we were 9-0, and so we haven't tasted this side of it yet. And so I think our guys already, you know, we just had to kind of create that mindset. Like we use the term Kaizen, you know, like we're going to continually try to get better. And when you get beat, sometimes it just creates this an environment that's a little more conducive to growth. And while you can grow through success and winning, that's the goal. Sometimes these are really good opportunities to see where you know we got exposed.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you guys were on a high, like 9-0, number 2 in the country. Like life is good, but sometimes you need that humbling experience to be like, we're not as good as we thought we were. We just got our butt kicked, and how can we get better from that? But what you mentioned, like tearing apart film, I'm always curious how different coaches go through the film aspect. Like when you have the team in film, are you like screaming at guys, or are you clipping stuff up? But like, how do you go about film?
Yeah, we try to stay really consistent with, again, our process. And so, you know, typically in a situation like this, a single game, you know, my top assistant and I, we both will go through it, and I will typically look for, you know, corrections from a defensive perspective, and then in nations. I mean, we love showing our guys positive clips of, hey, us executing our concepts at a high level. And Patrick McGrail, my top assistant, will do the same thing from an offensive perspective. And then we'll pull out, we meet with our guys individually to watch individual clips. So we'll pull some of those out. And then we like to go into our film sessions with, like, ideally, like, two themes. And this is like evolved. I mean, I've been at this for a while now. And,
yes, you have.
as the gray hair can suggest, right? but, you know, you're like, just like with our teams, we're trying to continually search for growth improvement. I think as a coach, like, we are doing that same. And so our film sessions as a team are brief. They're relatively condensed. Our guys are busy. You guys know, you guys are living it. Like, you guys got a lot going on. So we want to have a theme, and then have the clips that we show really fit. Like, so I'll maybe do the defensive segment and culture and rebounding stuff. That's like identity for us. And, you know, show like examples of us, you know, where we can grow. And then I like that if we have some like examples, like, hey man, like this is us, like this is an us clip right here. And then Coach McGrail will do the same thing offensively. And that really feeds right in then to the practice. We want to make sure that practice themes in our practice match up with our film. And so we, you know, kind of like we talk about see, hear, do. You see it, you hear about it, and now we got to go on the floor and we got to do it. And then we just stick. That's our process from start to finish, and with the goal just getting to become the best we can become in the end, and let the wins and losses and scoreboard play out the way it plays out.
I mean, it just sounds like, you know, you and your coaching staff and your program as a whole has a constant growth mindset, right? We see that from a lot of, you know, top coaches around college sports in general, that they just have a growth mindset where they want to get better. And I heard that first when you said, you know, we believe in winning and learning, because you're never really taking losses, you're learning from your losses, right? So I just really admire that about great programs.
Huge believer in that. in that growth mindset concept. And I think the great thing about being with your age group, this age group, is there's such thirst for learning, because that's, you're in an academic environment, and that, you know, the court, the gym is just another classroom. Yeah. It's a fun classroom, you know, but it is. And so why would we have a different approach, you know, on here than you would say in the classes you're taking. Right. And, you may not get all, you know, ace every test, right? Like we had a test last night and we didn't ace it. But that doesn't mean, again, in the big picture, in the long run, like falling a little short of expectations is sometimes, like, I think when we look back, now I'm going to get philosophical with you guys, but
I love it.
To this point, you're like, think about the things that you're most proud of, like your accomplishments to date that you're most proud of. Like, if you look at along the path that those things occurred, like there were probably times where, there was some serious adversity, right? There was, and you found a way to overcome them. And, you know, there are times where things look like, and it's kind of, you get to that crossroads, like, where am I going to go from here? And when, you know, before there's light, there's always darkness. and so I, all our guys were like, listen, this, a journey is not this linear, you know, smooth, like that's not real life. Like real life has setbacks, adversity, you know, we've got a key injury right now. Like, well, you know, hey, that's just what happens. And, you know, if you have, again, a growth mindset and approach it the right way, it's got a chance to ultimately be the best thing for you individually or for you collectively. And so we just try to really, really kind of lean into that, as opposed to, okay, we lost a game and now the world's coming to an end. Like, you know what? Like, that's not at all our mind. I think we're excited to get back together and see how we can improve. Like, that's really the exciting thing. So I think I've personally evolved a lot as a coach. Like, younger version of me didn't have that wherewithal. You know, I would have been, you know, I just think with time and experience, you gain perspective. And, but at the same time, there's urgency with it as well.
100%, Coach. So it's interesting. It's an interesting conversation, because we lost our game before Christmas break. We played Hobart, which is a very good team, well coached by Coach Stephon Thompson. They have a lot of great players as well. But, you know, I was just talking with some of my teammates, and like, obviously, yeah, we were like frustrated that we lost, but it's like, we can't get back together in the gym and like get back to work. It's like, all right, we clearly need to get better at some things. So like, let's look ourselves in the mirror. Let's figure out what we need to work on, you know, going into conference play, because this is where it's money time now. Like, this is where you make the tournament. So definitely.
I think the games, you know, the games give you so much feedback. Like, you know, when you're, I know as a coach, we're trying to, you know, each day in our practices, you have a plan. We're trying to improve this. But the moment you learn, like, you learn so much when you play, especially against really, you know, good teams, good programs, the Hobarts, the Illinois Wesleyans, whatever.
Yeah.
They're scheming. They're taking stuff away from you. They're studying your film. And again, it's this feedback. Okay. And now we're in the era, like, because of, this, you know, synergy, like every possession that you guys play is available, right? It's broken down. It's like, it's amazing how it's changed in my coaching career. And you know, you've got to, like, you learn so much from how people are, like, how they're playing you, what they're taking away, what they're, and then how you have to adjust in the end, like, the guys on the floor, like, we have to put them in positions to be successful, but then you guys as players have to go and then in adjust on the fly. Hey, they're doing this. Okay. We can still be successful. Maybe we got to do it a slightly different way. So it's always really interesting to see. And, you know, again, that's why, again, it's the learning, it's not losing, it's learning and applying the learning and getting better. And just, we stick with that process. We'll become our best versions.
Yeah. I want to move
forward in the conversation, and I'm going to be skipping a lot of your career. So you coached at Coe College. I'm only skipping because there's so much to talk about, like the past, you know, decade in your career. But so you coached at Coe College for 7 seasons, I believe, above 500 record for your career there. And you moved to UW Oshkosh playing in the WIAC. And I want to talk about one specific year, 2018. You guys made it all the way to the national championship, where you eventually lost to Nebraska Wesleyan. Shout out to Coach Wellman. I was watching highlights from that game. That was high-level hoops, like a really, really tough game. You guys also lost in the WIAC playoffs. So I just want you to talk about, you know, that year in general, like the ups and downs, that run, what you remember, but also like how that experience losing in the national championship kind of fueled like your drive, or, you know, what you saw in yourself that you kind of changed, because since then, like, well, before then too, but you like constantly kept improving, and now your team is like ranked number 2 in the country. So just talk about that.
Sure. Well, my time at Oshkosh, so I was there 6 years, and when we got there, I grew up kind of in that area and had a great appreciation for, first of all, for that league. The Wisconsin State League is an outstanding league. And growing up in Wisconsin, one of the cool things about being, you know, like Division III obviously is very regional, right? I mean, there's parts of our country that have a great appreciation for Division III athletics, and there's parts of our country that have no idea. And Wisconsin's one of those areas because of the strength of that conference historically, across all sports. You know, there's a great, like, if you're getting recruited by one of those schools, and you're like that's pretty big time, you know? And I think as I was coming up, like, I would have loved to play at one of those schools, and I wasn't good enough. Bottom line. So having the opportunity to go back there, and particularly Oshkosh, had great bones. Like when we got there, it was down. They were winless in the conference before. It was like starting over. I think in 2012, I got there. And it was just really, you know, when you take over a program that has struggled, you know, in some way it's a heavy lift to get it back, start building, but there's these great benchmarks. Like when you start, like they were winless in league the year before, 0-16. And I remember like our first year, you know, when we won a couple conference games, like that was a big deal. Like, now we weren't, you know, we were 7 and whatever, but at that time, like Stevens Point and Whitewater were like taking turns winning national titles. So, you know, we were playing, like we always said, it was really cool. Like, we're going to get to measure ourselves, like this, we get to play the best. And, you know, and so it was kind of, so culminating, I think year 3, we were in the conference championship game. We lost to Whitewater. I think they won the title that year, the NCAA. Year 4, we broke through. We got in the NCAA tournament. Year 5, we got in the NCAA tournament. We lost in the first round. So we get to that 2017, 2018. And, you know, we were, you know, we're like, this is like, we got a group that's got a chance to be really competitive. And, you know, we didn't win the league. But in that league, like, you can finish, you know, 3rd and win a national title. Like, that's not uncommon. And like, in terms of like just personal growth, when you're, you know, I love being, and that's, you know, why I love being where I'm in right now too, is like, you get stretched, you get, when you're challenged like that, you have to grow and get better. And definitely from a personal perspective, experience that competing in a strong league like that. You know, that team, we had, you know, the league was a juggernaut, as it always is. And you know, we got in the tournament, and we were on the road, and, you know, we're thinking after our kind of on the eve of the first round of the tournament, you know, we'd been knocked out in the first round the 2 previous seasons. And it's like, really kind of felt like, I don't say there's pressure, but, you know, it's time for us to advance. Like, we I think we all within our program kind of felt, you know, that heaviness or that pressure to, okay, this is 3rd year in a row we're in the tournament. Okay. And you gotta be good to get in, and we're good. And you gotta get a little lucky. And so we I remember like the night before in our hotel of the opening round, we were in we were at Wittenberg in Ohio, and we just after our shoot around or after our practice on Thursday, I turned to my assistant like, "All right, we gotta change it up. Like, we gotta do something tonight. That's normally we'd watch, you know, do another film session, and like, you know what? Let's." So we ended up having like a game show or something like. And one of the coaches on our staff was an educator, super creative. He came up with this kind of game show concept, and we brought our guys in on Thursday night in our hotel, and they brought their scouting reports. I think we even had like the projector set up. Like it looked like, and then we totally threw the curveball and had this just riotous fun game show that, I mean, I just remember like I literally being in pain from laughing so much. And you know, we go out and we win two games and we repeated it. Then the next weekend we were the Sweet 16. We were in Rock Island, Illinois. Augustana was hosting the sectional. And we're like, all right, Thursday night, like we're doing it. And we came up with another kind of fun, I don't know. I think there's karaoke. There was, you know, mimic the coaches. And we win both those games. We go to the Final Four. And then, of course, we stick with it. We do it again, you know, and ended up, you know, getting in the national championship game. And I still have like videos. I shot videos of some of the stuff from that, those sessions. And it's so cool to look back at, you know, and remember. And sometimes, like, again, talk about my own learning, like, you know, try to put myself in the shoes of you guys, right, in that. And it's like, you know, we've been at it for what, 5-6 months, you know, it's just, sometimes you just need to have fun. Sometimes you just need to, like, you know, like
loosen the mood a little bit. Like, we're about to go play a really big game. Yeah. We don't want to be stressed about like who's on the scout. Like, let's just kick it with my guys, good coaching staff. Let's have fun. I definitely see how that kind of like, you know, released some pressure and propelled you guys to the chip for sure.
No doubt. And it's like, so much of this, like when you look back, I think when you get done playing, you know, when no one cares really who was like all conference or who, how many points KJ you scored, you know, what you remember are these moments. And a lot of times these moments weren't on the floor. They were, again, like these collection of experiences. And when I look back at like that season, and certainly, you know, making to the Final Four in the championship game, but what really stands out to me is some of those, that Thursday night hotel, you know, goofiness was, we'll never forget that. And when you have that, you know, and I think I don't know if you guys have ever read the Book of Basketball, the Bill Simmons Book of Basketball.
Shout out Bill Simmons, the GOAT.
Shout out to him. Well, he's got that chapter in there called The Secret. And it's, I've used this every year with our team because it's basically Isaiah Thomas talked about, you know, the secret to the Bad Boys Pistons, the secret to basketball has nothing to do with basketball. Mm-hmm. The secret to basketball is about you get a group that's selfless, that's willing to sacrifice for one another. Okay. Put, you know, egos aside and for the betterment of the team. And we all know in basketball, being a synergistic sport, like that is the secret sauce. But it's so hard, like, you know, how do you arrive at that? How do you get a group to do that? Because it goes against kind of like human nature in some regards, right? So we, every year when we start out, we talk about like what the secret is and hearken back to that. So Bill nailed it with that interview and that chapter.
Yeah, 100%. Coach, so I didn't realize this until I like was saying it out loud. So you made it to the national championship, and then the next year you left for Walsh U. And we were just talking to Coach Kane at Johns Hopkins a few hours ago, and he was saying that they finished 28-2 the year before at Keene State, and then the year after he left for Johns Hopkins. And he had his own internal reasons, or, you know, going to a program like Johns Hopkins where the athletic department is just top tier. So I want to hear from you, like, one, how the opportunity arose to come to Wash U, but also, like, why you left after, you know, a national championship appearance.
Well, it was really, I mean, it was hard to leave Oshkosh and that team, because we had everybody. We had one senior, Charlie Noon, two seniors on that team, but we had the bulk of that team coming back and really poised. And they ended up, you know, winning the national championship next year. My assistant, Matt Lewis, became the interim, did a great job. He's the head coach there. He's phenomenal. So any credit to what we built at Oshkosh, Matt was a massive part of that. Tough to leave that group. Wasn't part of my master plan, but I wasn't like looking to leave for sure. If there was, but specific to Wash U, I had a experience at Wash U when I was earlier in my career. I was at Co, and we had an administrator who athletics reported to, a dean who had come from Wash U. And so I came with him to St. Louis, I think once or twice, you know, to take in a Cardinals game. He wanted me to meet some people at Wash U. I ended up meeting the legendary head coach, the gentleman I replaced, Mark Edwards, Hall of Famer, the guy, those national championship trophies behind me here, you know, that's all him. So I'd been on campus. I remember like first time I walked on this campus and just being like, wow, like this place is, this is a different thing, you know? And there was, and I remember getting back from that first trip and seeing my wife, Alyssa, and like, I'd love to be the head coach there someday, but I got a lot of work to do. Like I got to do some, you know, I've got to get better personally, and we've got to win a lot of games if I'm ever going to have a chance to be the head coach there. You know, that was, I don't know what year that was even. So fast forward. So after 2018 Mark Edwards, who's the Hall of Fame coach here, retires. And we're coming off of our run. And, you know, when he announced it, you know, it certainly was like, well, that'd be interesting. And, you know, I got in the mix and, you know, but still like, you know, wasn't, you know, I saw myself as being the head coach at Oshkosh for as long as they'd have me. And, and went through the process here you know, when I was down here, it became very clear, like, you know, this is a place where, you know, a pretty special place, where you can, you know, still have, you know, compete for national titles and, but also, you know, be at an elite academic institution. And where the excellence, is very evident in all areas. And, you know, it worked out. I'm very blessed to have the opportunity, and it was certainly, you know, mixed emotions from, it's always tough to leave a place you love. And particularly the guys, those Oshkosh guys were just phenomenal and still, you know, huge part of, you know, I tell them like, I wouldn't be here without you. You know, just like I wouldn't have got my first head coaching job at Co without those guys from Lawrence, you know, We're as good, you know, we're not savants as coaches, right? Like if we get off the bus with really good players, we have a chance to be successful, you know, and certainly I'm pretty humbled to know like, you know, why that happens, right? It's not like any genius from us. And, you know, I like to think that, you know, my part is to help them in their development, play a role, you know, and bringing out the best of them, just like they're bringing out the best in me, hopefully.
I mean, I love that you're giving credit to the players, coach, but you definitely got to give yourself some credit too, just because, you know, I know as coaches, like they help develop, you know, high school kids into young men, you know what I'm saying? They're a big part of that process, that maturing process. So you definitely got to give yourself some credit too, coach. But I wanted to bring up this conversation. I always love having this conversation about, or rather debate about top conferences in the country when it comes to Division III. You know, like some of my friends in NESCAC, you know, like to go back and forth with me about, you know, how good that league is. And I got to defer to them because the NESCAC is having a great run this year. And overall D3, there's a lot of great teams in NESCAC that are top 25. But regardless, I would love to hear your opinion about you coach in the WIAC, and obviously now you're in the UAA. So I just want to hear like the differences that you see in the level of play or how maybe teams play in the conference and just where they rank overall in the country.
This is kind of like the MJ LeBron debate, isn't it? I mean, I'll say this, because I was asked this recently, and it got me thinking. Like, I think as a coach, whatever league you're in feels like the best league in the country.
Yeah.
You know, because, again, there's such familiarity. And you look at your schedule like, gosh, like, I don't know how we can, like, how we're going to win that game, that game, that game, that game. I felt like whatever league, I guess I've been in a couple now, like, I've always felt like, God, this league is really good, you know? And so I just think that it's so personal to your situation, you know, and there is such familiarity when you talk about like league play, when you guys are playing league, like it's almost like you don't need a scout, like, especially when you're older, you know, those guys, they know you, you're not going to, you know, if the coaches, you know, coaches generally don't dramatically change systems and style of play, right? They're fairly consistent, especially if they're successful.
100%.
So you kind of know, like, there's such familiarity, and that just makes it makes it, you know, really, really hard to score and to, you know each other's tendencies. There's such a book on each other, right? And it comes down to like who's winning loose balls and, you know, rebounding and who just, you know, like makes a few more shots. Like the margins become really thin. So I'll start there. I think whatever league you're in feels like the best league in the country. I've always felt that personally. Now, being certainly coaching in the two leagues I have over the, you know, between the WIAC and the UAA, you know, certainly they're in the mix for, you know, two of the top leagues on a yearly basis. And I think that's true. And, you know, they're very different. I would say when you're in the Wisconsin league, again, those are predominantly Wisconsin kids playing in that league. And so you've recruited all the same, you're recruiting the same pool of kids.
Yeah.
You're going to a high school game and there's three other coaches from your league waiting to talk to the young man after the game. There's just, there's intense familiarity. With the UAA, we're so spread out, you know, and there's a pool of kids that get recruited by a lot of the same schools, but it's, you know, it's just it's a different beast that way. And I'd say stylistically, there's a little more variance in style of play in the UA, which has been kind of like from a geeky technical tactical standpoint, it's been really fun to be exposed. And I think I'm a king thief. Like I love to steal, like if something's like, if they're getting this on some action, well, maybe we need to like apply this, you know, and use it, because if it's getting us and we're pretty good defensively, usually, in the Wisconsin league, we were, I guess maybe the word's more homogeneous. Like there was a lot like half court, man to man, grind it out, really good, you know, just physical as physical can be. There's probably been a little more variance, and that's been really fun to see the different styles and be exposed to a little broader, diverse approach. You know, and as I say that, now I feel like conceptually, I don't know with you guys, with your leagues, but now we're actually in our league, we're everyone's ball screens and five out, and you know, it's like everyone's kind of, you know, split game, like that it's maybe getting a little similar too. I don't know.
It's just basketball now. I feel like everybody's realized that the more you're allowing the players to kind of control the game and it's less about like your sets, that's what's going to drive success. So I feel like it's just basketball. Yeah. Like you're running five out, but you know, like I want this player on my team in this spot because I know he can beat his guy one-on-one in this concept. So I just feel like the game's moved towards that at every level too.
Sure. And there's a greater conversation. Obviously we're hearing about at the NBA, right, this past week or two about is that, you know, there's so many, what was it last night? was it the Bulls-Celtics game, set a record for 108 missed threes, if I heard that correctly. you know, some insane things. And, I, you know, basketball continue, like, you know, will continue to evolve. And you're looking for those edges. And if something's working well, we're all thieves. We're all going to steal and apply it. And which is kind of the fun part about it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the what I wasn't prepared for, quite honestly, with the UAA is, I mean, the travel piece is a real piece, right? Like, you know, you're flying, in our case, we're flying to our games, and then we're playing, you know, Friday night, Sunday afternoon, and then if we're on the road, we're traveling on Saturday in between, like, with we're playing NYU Brandeis. You know, that's a 4-hour travel on Saturday to a shoot around to a game on Sunday. And just like it really does require, you know, it's awesome. It's super cool. It's fun. And you're playing really good programs, but you gotta be like, it'd be pretty tough to deal, yeah, to handle that aspect. And well, especially as a student athlete managing the academic part, certainly, as I've done it a few times now, and you know, you learn how to be efficient. You learn, like, hey, that's Saturday practice. You know, you better be smart with what we're doing on the floor and really efficient, because, you know, we've got, you know, the next game's coming in a few hours, essentially.
Yeah. I never really thought about the point you made about, like, the UAA being like a national thing, and the, to use that as an argument for the debate about the best conference, because makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, if the WIAC is only Wisconsin leagues while UAA is traveling around the world and getting players from all over, like, there should be better players around the world and compared to, you know, just in Wisconsin. So that's definitely going to start being a part of my argument, Ruta, when we're having these debates. But I was going to wait to bring this up till after the break, but I want to continue this UAA talk because the UAA is loaded right now. I mean, the rankings are going to change for next week, but as of last week, Emory was number one. You guys were number two. NYU was number eight. Carnegie Mellon was 19. So that's half the conference that's ranked. And then Brandeis and Chicago are both 7-2. And then Rochester and Case Western, I think Rochester's over 500, and Case Western's just a great program led by a great coach. So, like, how was that for you preparing the guys game to game, and just talk about, like, the battles in that conference every night?
Yeah, it is I remember when I had to do the preseason rankings this year for the league, and just kind of staring at a blank sheet of paper, I'm like, I have no idea, you know, where, you know, how to rank these teams, you know, especially in this. And again, maybe it's coming somewhat to an end of, you know, the COVID eligibility and certainly, you know, I think a lot of our schools in this league, you know, have a good deal of grad programs. Some have really taken advantage of the grad transfers and, you know, kudos to them. I mean, that's been an available talent pool that wasn't out there, you know, 4 years ago. And that's only added to the competitiveness. You know, it's like, it's really old. It's seasoned. It's along with really good coaches. There's really, you know, there's not a lot of difference between, you know, whatever 1 and 8 in the league. And I think it's going to bear out probably pretty similar this year, you know, and, you know, you might get, you know, knocked on a Friday night, and you gotta, you know, just be super resilient and gritty and go back, because you could, you know, every team is quality, and you can, ultimately we look at it as iron sharpens iron, you know, like, let's embrace, like, that's why you come to a place like Wash U. Is you want to be in that, you want to, you know, be really tested. You're going to be tested and challenged, in a whole host of ways here, certainly, you know, academically, but also, you know, in the athletic realm. Why should it be any different? It's the ultimate test. And again, if we have that right approach of, like, being about growth, then this is the place for you, because you're going to be really tested, especially in the current environment, in this league. It is, there's just, it's quality from throughout, That's what makes it fun. And I love, there's a purity to it, right? There's, we have to this point still no conference tournament. So we're the only league that doesn't have a conference tournament. We play 14 league games, double round robin. You play on every campus, and the team that, you know, ends up on top earns that AQ, and they have earned that AQ. Right. And, you know, we've been fortunate. I think the last 3-4 years, we've had either 4 or 5. 1 year we had 5 teams in. I think we had 4 teams in the last couple of years. And, you know, that's a point of pride. It is unique, and I'm kind of going on a tangent here, guys, but you know, while we are super competitive within our league, there is a lot of pride in what the league represents. And I'll give you one example. Well, 2 examples. One is after our, after we play, what's been our Sunday game for us. We have historically played at noon on Sundays. We have a meal with the opposing team right after.
That's tough.
And yeah, and it's pretty unique. And I remember when they told me this is what we do, I'm like, what? What are we doing? But after experiencing it, I totally get it. It's what's always happened. It's about more than it's, you know, we're between the lines, we're gonna compete like crazy. But then it's about a little bit bigger than that, even. And to have, you know, I think as a league, the coaches, we really embrace and model it, that our student athletes, I mean, they're going to run in similar circles beyond our institutions. And they're having shared experiences. Like they're experiencing, just because you're at WashU or Emory or Brandeis or Alfred or Utica, I mean, you guys are experiencing very similar things and very similar challenges, and it's really a cool thing. And I really love that the people who thought of that 38, 39 years ago were, you know, really, I think, ahead of things. So it is different. It's unique. It's and I'm a big defender. I think sometimes our league gets some shots from other places in the D3 community, and maybe some are warranted. I don't really get caught up in it. All I know is it's, you know, we're really proud to be part of it and take a lot of pride in competing in it. And, you know, especially when we're not playing each other, really supportive of each other's programs.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's another thing I was thinking about is like all the Division III is regional besides UAA. And I think that makes your job a lot harder too, because this might be crazy, but the people that want to live in Atlanta that go to Emory versus the people that want to live in Boston at Brandeis are completely different people. Like they have different, I don't know if this is a fact, but like genetically or whatever the case may be, they're different. So like when you're scouting for Emory, it might be a running jump or, you know, they're trapping all over. And then a week later you're playing Emory and it's a completely different style of basketball. Whereas like in the Empire 8, I know that most teams in our conference are good dribble drive kick to like an open shot, where like when you're in conference, you're seeing 100 different play styles day to day and game to game. So I think that the UAA definitely deserves more credit. I know it gets a lot already, but the shots aren't needed because, I mean, it's just good basketball and a lot of different, you know, talents and play style.
But yeah, and I also was like, again, having, you know, been a Division III player myself, you know, a few years ago, just seeing how Division III athletics and let's say basketball has grown and changed and improved in, let's just say, the 30 years that I've been aware of it. The let's just call it the bottom of Division III has come way up. Like the gap between, you know, top and bottom used to be seismic. I don't think it is anymore. I think that there's just more good basketball players out there, and they're dying for places to play. And I mean, we can talk, you know, not to get into like the current state of, you know, college athletics at the highest level and what that means, blah, 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 blah. But it's just, there's more good basketball being played throughout this country, throughout all these leagues. There's good players all over the place, and maybe they're not always at the name schools or the most recognized schools, but man, you know, it's just, there's, and I think it's going to continue. Like, to get on one of the, you know, to be on a Division III basketball, you gotta be a good player. You gotta be really good, you know? And I think institutions that I've supported, I mean, athletic programs are the driving force for a lot of schools like surviving right now. Like, you need, yeah, you know, and so what does that mean? Well, recruiting, that means some resource. That means success begets more of those things. And so, you know, it makes sense that there's just more good basketball. And, you know, there's a, you know, heck, a ton of players playing at our level in our league and outside of our league that turn down opportunities to play at scholarship schools for different reasons. And that's going to continue. And then there's players who, you know, have just developed and could play at a level or two higher or playing in this league. We see that all the time. Yep. And it's awesome. And it's going to do nothing but continue going forward.
Yeah. 100%. Well, I mean, we've talked for an hour and haven't even got to the break. So let's take a quick break and stay with us. All right, we're back. I want to talk about Justin Hardy. I mean, the Hardy Foundation is like really, really big around Division III, a really touching story. I mean, when I was watching videos and doing research about it, like, I was getting chills, even like mentioning his name, I'm getting chills right now. So just to give the viewers a little context, Justin Hardy played at Wash U for 4 years. His freshman year, he was a dog, won Rookie of the Year. And watching some of his clips, it was like, wow, that kid is tough. And then, you know, sophomore year and junior year, he's dealing with COVID, or the program, the country's dealing with COVID. So his junior year was canceled. And then senior year, he gets diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer. And I mean, I wouldn't know how to deal with that, like, moving forward. And I mean, it started spreading during the season, but that didn't hold him back at all. Like, I mean, he was first team all conference dealing with stage 4 stomach cancer, which more chills just arose in me. And then he also had his career high that year. And I mean, you were, I know that affected you a lot, like just hearing some of your interviews. So I want to hear from you, like, what it was like coaching Justin Hardy, how that affected you, and just, you know, if I missed anything about the story, add on to that.
Whew, yeah, we could probably a whole separate podcast on what Justin meant and his story. I'll try to be as brief as I can to the point. It's been a couple of years now, but it is. I don't think there's ever been anything like it. This young man was playing. I'll give you one example. He was diagnosed in late April. He lost. I mean, this guy, he was 6'5", 215, 220, jacked. And he lost, and you know, they threw everything at it in terms of a treatment, and he lost, 50 pounds. He was down to like one, say, skin and bones over the summer. And I remember thinking, like, I just hope, cause he was set to graduate in 3.5 years from Wash U. He had a semester left, and we're like, God, it'd just be awesome. We're coming back. We hadn't played his junior year. We're going to start playing again in, you know, 21. Could he just make it back to graduate, to be, you know, be around our guys, right? So we get to the start of this academic year, and I think I was showing a recruiter on campus, and I came into our gym, and Justin was here, and he was like doing the mic and drill. And that was the first time I'd seen him, like, on the court. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting, you know, cool. That's first of all, awesome. I can't believe, like, but he's just literally like, that's what he's doing, the mic. And then he, like, I saw him like a little while later, and he's like, coach, you know, I was talking to my doctors, and, you know, I said, it was okay that I start, like, you know, working out a little bit. And great. He goes, my goal is to get back to be able to be at practice, like to be able to practice with you guys. And, you know, I was like, oh, geez, that would be amazing, you know. And never think, and so that was probably like early September. Well, you know, practice starts October 15th. By October 15th, he was practicing. And, you know, like at some fraction of what he was as a athlete player. But we were just like, it was like every day was a blessing. Like, oh my God, like Justin is like, just, he's with us, you know. And we get to the first game and he's playing. And in fair, he was, again, not anything close to what he was, but just, it was so inspiring that he's playing. And, you know, what he didn't lose, like he was this, he's an explosive athlete, but is what really made him different is his IQ, his feel for the game was so elite and he didn't lose. In fact, it probably brought that out even more. He had to really rely on that. Like he couldn't blow by anybody anymore. He couldn't dunk over someone, but he was so savvy and so, and he could just kind of orchestrate and, but during this, he was still undergoing treatment. So he would, it was not uncommon, guys. He would get, you know, be in the hospital on a Monday all day getting his chemo treatment. And then he'd leave and go home and he'd still be like, they'd send him home and he'd still be getting it like through, you know, and at his apartment. And they, at some point on Tuesday, they'd come out and take it off him. So basically, you know, Monday and half of Tuesday. So he went, you know, certainly wouldn't come to a practice on Monday. And Tuesday, maybe he'd show up and watch. And then Wednesday, he'd like come and participate partially. And Thursday, do a little bit more. And if we had a game on Friday, he'd play. And best we found, we don't know of an example of another athlete doing that.
I don't know
that we've tried it. Like if we, and maybe it's happened, but if it is, pretty rare. And you know, we could write, this really should be a movie.
Yeah.
Like this story. And what, one of the cool things, again, I could go a lot of different directions. He's, you know, it's tragic that we lost him in the Hardy Foundation. Like and it's really driven by, you know, I'm fortunate to be on that board, but his parents are amazing. His siblings are absolutely rock stars. And they're so like, they're giving scholarships out to division, to athletes who want to go play in Division III. And this is open to anybody. Like, go to the Hardy Foundation website. There's a scholarship application. They're putting money into gastric cancer research. And so whether it be his impact here on our campus, in our athletic department, he is going to continue to evolve and impact so many people because, you know, just because of who he was and his story and how he handled it. And I'll if you haven't, and again, it's been a couple of years now. And so we certainly, his story is not known by everybody, of course. But anyone who hasn't seen it, should go and watch the long piece that ESPN did on him. And it's called Mind. If you just, you know, Google Mind Over Matter, Justin Hardy, it'll pull up about a 10-minute piece that ESPN did. And I think it's just, you know, it's so personal because we lived it with here. But even if I had no idea, if you don't know him, like it is good. And he had a choice. You know, when he was given this diagnosis, you know, you've got 12 to 18 months. You know, can you imagine how any of us would respond to that? And he made conscious decisions, okay, to, you know, I'm going to eliminate negativity in my life. Okay. I'm going to find positive. I'm going to pour into others. We heard him say more than once that his favorite year of his life was that year. You know, I think you could teach a course on leadership with his blueprint. And we certainly here, you know, it is incorporated in so many aspects of certainly our program, of our department, of this university. And, you know, a part of our mission and all of us that really were touched by Justin, we feel we have a responsibility. It's an awesome responsibility, but it's a responsibility nonetheless to not let the lessons he taught, not be continued to discussed and certainly it shaped our lives personally. Like, we're better. I'm a way better human being for having Justin Hardy in my life, as all the people he's touched. And so, it is a personal, like, yeah, it's an awesome responsibility. I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Coach, I watched the longer, like, ESPN piece that you're talking about last night, and like saw on KJ this morning, like, it made me, I got teary eyed, because it's just crazy. Like, he was literally facing like his own mortality. And even in that last year, like, he chose to play basketball, Division III basketball, with his teammates, with his coaches, and just have fun doing it. And he put his all into that last year. And like you said, had his career high, was first team all conference. Like, that's crazy. That's crazy. Like, that, the only athlete that I know off the top of my head that like dealt with some form of cancer and like still battled back and play is Eric Berry. He played for the Chiefs. He was diagnosed with lymphoma over the offseason. And I don't know if he either took a break or and he came back the next year, but I know he came back and he wasn't like the same player, but he was still like a great safety for the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. But regardless, Justin Hardy's story is amazing, and it's an inspiration to a lot of, you know, all of us playing Division III basketball who are playing for the love of the game, because I think that was truly what Justin was doing. He was playing because he loved it. So
absolutely. Absolutely. I think we went back. So he had his career high. So he had his career high in late November. We were playing in a little like tournament at Rhodes College in Memphis, Tennessee. We go back there this past the same week, a couple weekends ago, Thanksgiving weekend. We're in the same locker room. And, you know, that was 2021, so 3 years ago. And so my seniors now were freshmen that year.
Damn.
And the chill, like, just being in that locker room. So what he scores 1 point. And this was he really busted out. He, over COVID, like, he was a good shooter, but not great. He was like maybe a low 30s% from three. So over COVID, he rebuilt his shot. Okay. Like, this is him. Like, he put his mind on something. He was going to do it. He rebuilt his shot. And then we don't get to play that following year, but we saw it. Like, he was such a better shooter. So we get to the year that, you know, he's playing through his illness, and he's a flat stroke now. I mean, he shot over 40% from three that year. And again, he had to play the game a little bit differently. He wasn't this explosive athlete, but anyway, he has that big game. He gets interviewed after the game, and we had to go down, walk down like maybe like two or three levels to get down to our locker room. And I'm walking down with him. And at the bottom of the stairwell was Jack Nolan, who was a fifth year All-American for us. Jack became sort of Justin's confidant. Jack's waiting for him and just like a mess, just, you know, losing it. And Justin goes down and they have this embrace and hug and, you know, and I remember, I'll never forget, Justin's like, you know, Jack, I love you. You believed in me. You said that I could do this. And I'm behind them and I'm just like, I'm melting myself, like observing this. And again, you talk about like moments, and we won the game. The winning the game was so minuscule and important, since you're tertiary. And to be back standing in that stairwell, I took all our guys this year, and I just like, we said, we have to honor what that young man represents by like, what does he expect? You know what he expects. The ultimate competitor, play the right way, play together. And just to be back in that environment and that spot and that space, you know, it's those are the moments, right? And it comes through a terrible, tragic situation, but through that, there are some good. And you know, we see this unfortunately with the young man from Trine, you know, Fred Garland, and that community and that team and that program's going through this now, and they're going to have to find ways, like, for that young man, because that young man was a crazy competitor and an awesome teammate, and it's awful. It's tragic when a young person, you know, loses his or her life, but life does go on, and there's a way of honoring that person and what they represent. And that's what we feel with Justin, that we have a responsibility.
100% coach. You know, I gotta commend, you know, Jack Nolan, him, you, and the entire WashU D3 community, but especially you and the WashU community, just, you know, being Justin's support system, you know what I'm saying? Especially for any athlete, you know, having a strong support system is very crucial, because, you know, as student athletes, as KJ knows, you can go through a lot. And especially in Justin's case, that, like, he's going through like an unimaginable situation. But you guys were there for him and helped him finish out the year, man. Shout out to that UChicago player too, that let him score on senior night. Like that was like, I was like, damn, shout out that kid. Like they were losing that game too, but he was just like, he was talking to him. I was watching the clip, like he was like talking to him. I don't know what he said, but they were both like laughing, and then just shot that layup. And I was just like, damn, that's basketball right there. So I definitely love that.
Bryce Hopkins. I mean, anytime I've seen Bryce since then, you know, like there's always like, that's just, you know, that's really special. And I think that's our league. That was another moment that you'll just never.
Goosebumps.
Senior day. And Justin was, you know, he was really unable to play anymore. And he had a treatment that just led to just physically no longer being able to play. And he dressed out, and, you know, it just how it worked out. Unbelievable. It's pretty emotional just even thinking about it. But Bryce and those guys from Chicago were incredibly, you know, they got it. Like, we all got it. And that was just a really, really touching moment.
100%, coach. Definitely, like I said, rest in peace, Justin Hardy. Definitely had an effect on the Division III community as a whole. Moving on a little bit, I'm a little bit on a lighter note. I watched your interview, Spicy Ones, with Stud Life of WashU. I actually thought it was a very funny and like great interview. Shout out those guys. They did a good job. But you had a quote or line in there talking about you want to find players who live. You have a philosophy that you can either live it or you love it when it comes to basketball. So like, how have you found players that can kind of do both, that can live it but also love basketball at the same time?
Yeah. First of all, that that day I went, we recorded that literally right before we had a practice. And so I went right from that recording to practice. And it was one of the most uncomfortable practices, because my my stomach was, you know, some of this, I don't know what I ingested they put on some of those, and what they should not be. Sure. And so that was the time, but those guys were great. Our Stud Life people are fantastic. And so what, okay, I lost my train of thought here.
No, you're good. I was saying that you
live and love. Yeah.
Live it and love it.
Yeah. So I actually, like many things I've stolen, I think our baseball coach here, Pat Bloom, we were talking about like just approach to just recruiting in general, and maybe at an institution like a WashU, and, you know, he kind of shared, like, he looks at it like there are those who leverage it, like it, love it, live it, kind of a four tier. And And I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I totally agree with that. The problem is we can't, like, unlike a SAT, there's no like test we can give for that, right? Like, where do you fall on the continuum, you know?
Yeah.
I think when in this whole relationship, like, recruiting is relationships, right? It's building a relationship. And I just think recruiting is so different than it was, gosh, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Like, I started in this profession, you know, when I first started, you know, athletes didn't have a cell phone. Like, it was like you were calling to call, you'd call the home phone. Inevitably, they weren't there a lot, but you talk to mom, dad, siblings, and you build a lot of relationship with, you know, you weren't texting. It was kind of like, okay, now it'd be very old school. It's a relationship building. It's the fundamentals of the building blocks. It's just the medium is different today. But nonetheless, you know, and again, I, having done this for a while, you learn, you know, like, what kind of guys, you know, work for you and in a place like this. And, you know, it is like, it's, you're not on a scholarship here. You're here. You love it. You know, you got to be passionate about this, and it's going to be hard. You get two full-time jobs. You're a full-time student and you're a full-time athlete. Okay. And it's going to be hard, especially as a young player, student athlete. You guys know this, you've lived this. It's not easy, and it's not supposed to be. And if you don't have, I said, you know, a lot of guys like basketball, you know, but like's not enough. Like, it has to be deeper. It has to be love. And what does love look like? What does loving it look like? Okay. Well, loving it means, you're coming early. Loving it means, like, every single day, like, you don't, there's not a day that you don't, like, when you step on the wood, like, you're competing. Like, if you're on the green team and I'm on the red team, you're trying to kick my butt every single time and embarrass me. And as I'm trying to do that to you. And that's how we show respect for the game, respect. And that's how we get better. That's iron sharpens iron. And, you know, we talk a lot about, I think I stole this, I don't know who, maybe Chris Beard or someone I saw talked about, like, you know, 4 to 7. Sometimes we're practicing, you know, like, it's not just the 4 to 7. It's what happens from 7 p.m. to 4 o'clock the next day. Like, sleep, nutrition, you know, training room, sports performance, let alone the academic responsibilities. Like, that's process. We've got to be 7 to 4 p.m. guys just as much as we need to be 4 to 7 p.m. guys. Mm-hmm. If we're just 4 to 7 p.m., we don't separate from anybody else. Like, everyone can be good from 4 to 7. Can we be really good from? That's love. And then the highest level is living it. Like, that's the highest part. Like, if you're in the live it. And so we always say, like, the bottom tier for us is love. And I'm pretty direct in the process with young men. Like, if you don't love it, then we're not a great place for you.
Yeah.
You know, and some guys, like, when you're 17, 18, maybe you're not even self-aware, but it's like, just to talk through, like, this is what this, like, you know, I look like, if I have in my office, like, our standard is these guys right here. Like, that's why I came here, to a place that we aspire to do that. And doesn't mean we're a failure if we don't reach it, but that's what can happen. Cause it's happened before. You know, this is a program that's, you know, had 39 consecutive winning seasons, hopefully 40, if we, you know, can keep going. Like, that's what we do here, you know?
Yeah.
But it ain't easy. It's hard as hell.
100%. And coach, I was kind of confused, like, reading or listening to Neruda's, like, question about it. Not that he did a bad job explaining. I was just kind of confused, like, where your answer was going to go. But I can definitely see, like, why your teams have been successful over the years, like, with that philosophy and, you know, hoping for the best for you guys. And there was, like, 4 to 5 questions that we wanted to ask, but we've just been recording for so long. So we're going to move to the rapid fire and start in 5 edition. So Let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
Let's roll.
All right, Coach. First rapid fire question. I just wanted name some of your favorite basketball memories that you've had over the last however many years you've been coaching. I just want to hear some of them, and you know, maybe outside of any the NCAA tournament wins, just some of the smaller memories that we don't maybe know about.
Yeah. Well, a couple of them we've actually hit upon some of them today, right? Yeah. With some of the stuff with Justin and mentioned the hotel room with the Oshkosh. But yeah, so I'm going to point to so when I was an assistant at Lawrence University, 2000 to 2005, I think I've mentioned that was that's my alma mater. We were just very okay to below average when I was there as a player. But we got in the 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005. That program got rolling, and we made an Elite Eight in 2004. Went back second round 2005. I'd left after that. 2006, they went undefeated in the regular season. They were number one in the country, and this is a school of 1,200 students. It's more known more for music. You know, when I was playing there, there'd be 100 people in the stands, and I felt like I was related to about 30 of them. And you know, and then you know, 10 years later, you know, it's standing room only. We had to actually erect new bleachers in there because the crowds were overflowing. Anyway, I'm going to fast forward. We had those teams just got inducted into the Hall of Fame at Lawrence back in early November. That 03, 04, 05, 06, that era. There's three teams. And I was fortunate to be an assistant. So I guess I got – and so we got together for the ceremony, and it just you talk about your why, why do we do this? It was just encapsulated by that, you know, those guys are super, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're very successful. They're awesome young men. Many of them brought their kids. And, you know, I remember coming back, I went to it. I came back, we had a practice here at Wash U, and I told our guys, I saw your future, guys. I just spent, 24 hours with, I think who you guys are going to be 20 years from now. And it was just really poignant for me to see kind of the full circle, the cycle of this, and that the love, the connection, and certainly having success and winning championships, I think galvanizes and it tightens those bonds, but it doesn't have to be that. But that whole experience has been really especially at this stage in my career, you talk about just pumping air in my tires going into the start of a season, just to give me that great perspective, and was just perfect. And shout out to those guys. And as I told them that night, maybe we got together for some beverages after, I went to, because of that success, I got my first head coaching job. I mean, I had my resume looked a lot better because we were winning. Without you guys, I'm not, and get to do what I got to do. And so really appreciate those guys. But man, it was great for perspective too.
It's definitely those are some of the dope moments that coaches always talk about, seeing your players older, wives are coming, kids and stuff like that. So it's definitely dope. One rapid fire question I had was, so obviously your Wisconsin Oshkosh team went to the national, you guys went to the national championship. What is another team during your coaching tenure that you feel like could have competed with that national championship team?
Yeah, I'd say one that comes to mind is our 2019-2020 team here at Wash U. We just joke, there's 16 teams that probably hang a 1/16th of a banner. that were still alive in the tournament when it got shut down. I had 5 terrific seniors that year, and we are, I guess you guys were probably in high school yet, right? During that 2020. Weird time, right? Looking back, but those guys joke. We were on site. We were going to play North Central in the Sweet 16, and we're practicing and having a great practice. But we all knew what was coming. We were hoping just to maybe get that game in the next day. And we're doing sort of like a, I guess, call it shell drill, super competitive. And I saw that the NCAA site rep was on his phone, kind of off to the side, and I saw him on it. And I saw this, he shot this look to me and just kind of like shakes his head, and he just knew like it's over. And he was nice enough to let us like at least complete the segment. And then he's like, "Hey Pat, they just canceled it," you know? And, you know, those guys joke that they're the only guys that, you know, their careers ended like literally in shell drill. Like that's how their careers ended. Like what a way to end. But that team was really like really playing well. And not saying we're going to, you know, all 16 teams probably felt they're going to win it at that point. But that was I would love to have been played that out. Cause that group was really, really had found itself, and we kind of evolved that year. We started playing small. Our big kid got hurt. We played a bunch of hybrid, like Justin was a sophomore and a stud. We played just a different style than we've been playing. And it was really, you know, we maybe had figured some things out. And that's one team that comes to mind.
Okay. And then last rapid fire question. I was wondering if you had like a pregame ritual that you do, any interesting things that you do before games.
Always evolves. I try to work out on a game day. Try to get some sweat in somewhere. I'm not superstitious. I'm just a little stitious. It definitely would define me. My wife, I always thought she texts me good luck before the games. And last night I'm in the locker room and I don't see a text message for her. And so I'm like, I text her like, "Hey, I need a text." In fact, I text my son to, "Hey, tell mom to text me." You know, this is like 45 minutes before the game. Yeah. I don't know if that had any bearing on the outcome. She informed me. She informed me this morning that she had wished me good luck before I left, and that covered her, and that she doesn't always text me before. So we got some things to sort out here over the break.
That's funny. Well, we're going to move to the starting five edition. So if you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And I wanted to ask you about this, but your teams, especially this year, they rank really high in like field goal percentage. So you need to have smart players to, you know, maintain that. So the addition is going to be the smartest players you've ever coached. So pick a lineup 1 through 5 and just say what position they would be at.
First of all, I'm going to have to caveat to all the, I've had such, you know, if you coach as long as I have, man, just a ton of like just awesome guys, great players, and behalf of leaving anybody out, I don't want to do that. But guys that come to mind, I'm going to start with, I had a young man by the name of Ben Boots at Oshkosh, who was our point guard there, who
he was killing in the national championship.
He was, and continued that his senior year, and just consummate coach on the floor. Just, you know, a guy that would, by the time he was a sophomore, was like kind of like calling plays and like, "Coach, we need to run this." And like, usually he was right on the money. Like, you got it. One of the great, like, we beat Augustana in the Elite Eight, and it was an incredible game, overtime game. They had their guard went off. Ben went just took over and just, that wasn't good coaching. That was a really good player that the moment was not too big for. Ben is definitely in that group. One of my young players from back in Lawrence when I was an assistant, Chris Breyer, who won the Jostens Award, I believe he won it in 2005. He really was kind of the linchpin that really changed the trajectory of that program. Just an incredible competitor, 6'4", 6'5", averaged a career double-double for 4 years. And it was as much as his competitiveness and drive, but just great. He's a great passer. We just would play. We dump him the ball at like 10 feet and run around him, and he would just either score or assist. You know, it wasn't anything crazy that way. I'd be remiss if Justin Hardy wasn't in this group. I mean, Justin, as I said, like we could just orchestrate offense for us. And especially when he was playing with Jack Nolan, those two would get together and play two man games, you know, mid possession, they'd find each other and just play off each other, ball screen, handoff, myriad actions. And just Justin would direct guys and just tell guys, oh, you got to cut, you got to, like, we tend to play pretty conceptually here. And so it takes guys that really have that feel and can communicate it. And Justin was always a step ahead. He could see, he was a chess player, not a checkers player. 4 and 5. Okay. Well, Breyer, I'd say Breyer is Breyer would be kind of my four man probably. I got to someone from back in my my co days. I'm gonna go young man David Mataloni, back at co. Was from the Des Moines area. Ended up was a player of the year in the Iowa conference. Incredible feel for the game. And then a fifth guy. Geez, you're putting me on the spot. I'm gonna keep my current guys humble. So we're gonna stay away from our
current, I like it. I like it.
Current group of guys. I'm gonna Charlie Jacob. Charlie Jacob was 2-time defensive player of the year in the UAA. And really grew, and is kind of cool. Just, we still pull out some clips of him from time to time, just to teach our guys, like, hey, this is, I don't know if you guys are perimeter players, but man, like the amount of like ball screens and handoffs and DHOs and gets and stuff that you've got, like, you got to have a motor. And he was unbelievable. He's just extremely competitive, but had a feel for how to, like, be physical without fouling.
Yeah.
How to could guard 4 different positions. He'd guard 1 through 4 at 6'2". And so I guess my lineup's gonna be small ball, but small ball's kinda in right now anyway. So I got a very much small ball lineup I'm throwing out there.
a bunch of dogs too. I definitely think that lineup is tough, but that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We definitely appreciate your time, Coach, after the game. And we're looking forward to see what WashU got the rest of the year. We might need a part 2 or something to cover the questions we didn't get to ask.
Let's do it. Let's come back. And I'd love to come on. I just, again, commend you guys. You're doing awesome work. I think it's amazing, again, as student athletes yourself, like, you find time. Clearly, this, not only this is a passion, but man, I'm looking forward to digging into your inventory and listening. The ones I listened to have been fantastic. And so humbled and thankful, and good luck to you guys. I know you're seniors, and really enjoy, leave your legacy. Clearly you are, and excited to follow you guys going forward as well.
Appreciate you, Coach.
All right, to end this episode, we're going to do another segment of Only in D3, where Ruta and I tell you what it's like to be a Division III student athlete, and, you know, a story specifically, like, centered around Division III that you won't see at other divisions. So I don't know if you want to go first or you want to hand it to me, but let's do it.
So my Only in D3, I guess not story, it's more so, I think it's a funny I think it's a funny thing, like, surrounding D3. A lot of people know, obviously, like, with Division III, like, the roster sizes are very big, right? So when I came into my freshman year, like, I didn't know that the freshman class was, like, because they had, like, not, I was a COVID class, so we already had, like, a big class because of that, but I didn't know that, like, you would have, like, almost 20 people for at least Utica on the roster.
Yeah.
So. Throughout my years here, it's been like we've had like high roster numbers, right? So usually when we go to away games, bro, every time we go to an away game, there's always like 3 or 4 seats missing at the start of the game. So the game will be starting and like we're still missing like seats at the end of the bench. You know what I'm saying? I usually sit toward the front now, but But like when I was a freshman and sophomore and stuff like that, I would sit towards that and there would always be seats missing. They would always forget to hook us up and we had to like sit on the floor for like the first 2 minutes of the game. So I guess that's an only in D3 thing for me that I think is kind of funny.
Nah, yeah, especially being an underclassman, it's like no chance I'm getting a seat today if there's not enough because everybody else is pushing me to the end. Yeah. Not like it, but my only in D3, I'm going to do something from like this week. So obviously it's break. Nobody's on campus besides us and the girls team. And I'd say I'm a pretty big gym rat. Like I like getting in the gym. Mm-hmm. And this week we have like the 12-2 schedule, but the gym is closed. If nobody's there, like if none of the coaches are there, it's just locked. So I haven't been able to get in the gym. And this is mostly centered around Mike Moskowitz, Coach Moskowitz of the girls team. He's having doubles. So they do 10-12. So I can't get in before. And then they do like 4-6 when the building is actually closed at 6. So this is for Mike Moskowitz. You entered the only in D3 segment because you're hosting doubles. It's been super hard for me to get in the gym. I'm feeling weak. And if I have a bad game today, I'm blaming it on Moskowitz. And that's going to be our segment of only in D3. If you enjoyed that segment and this episode, definitely subscribe. Go follow us at Not Even D2 on all social media platforms. And thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.